is Simmons against Gillespie. Mr. Boyles.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I am Shane Boyles on behalf of Police Officer Greg Simmons. Procedurally, this matter is before the Court upon the dismissal under Rule 12b-6 by the trial court below. The trial court dismissed this matter as a matter of law and found that there were no set of facts which could be pleaded which would entitle the plaintiff to relief.
Is there a Rooker-Feldman problem here? In that you're essentially asking us to alter the Illinois appellate court decision, either, you know, to include the remedy of back wages or to remand the case to the board with instructions to order such relief. Do you see anything like that here?
I see the practical effect of what we're doing would be that, yes, that's correct, but I don't think that any orders need to be altered. And actually, it could very well be that the appellate court anticipated that the defendants would go ahead and comply with the law and reimburse Officer Simmons as provided in the statute.
But how is this a federal due process issue when there were state processes available to obtain relief that haven't been pursued?
With all due respect, Your Honor, I don't believe that there have been. The particular statutory subsection 17 of the Fire and Police Commissioners Act, provides, basically allows a chief of police or a city official to bring charges, either a city official to bring charges against a police chief, and it has been extended to allow police chiefs to bring charges against individual officers.
Well, what process is it that you pursued before the board or the state court? To seek the back wages after the Illinois appellate court opinion reversed the matter. What did you do?
Nothing.
Nothing.
We did not petition the agency, and my answer to your earlier question is that Section 17 does not provide for such a procedure.
But you acknowledge in your reply on page 5, I mean, you didn't appeal to the appellate court. You didn't ask them for back pay, and the Illinois appellate court could have awarded back pay if there was enough evidence on the record, right?
Well, the appellate court definitely could have remanded to the trial court below.
Right, and there was no request to the appellate court to award back pay.
We did not specifically ask the appellate court to award back pay.
So how can you claim there was a denial of due process?
Our claim is that once the appellate court's order was issued that had the effect of wiping away the 20-day suspension that was imposed on the officer. And as a matter of law, under that statute, not only specifically in the statute, but as a matter of Illinois case law, under that statutory scheme, the officer had been wrongfully deprived of his right to work, and he was therefore entitled to back pay for all time in connection. I can make it specific to that particular 20-day suspension.
But couldn't there be legitimate reasons why a legislature might limit the back pay entitlement to decision by the board, such as to avoid mandatory back pay awards when a court reverses after years have passed. But by straying from the plain language, wouldn't the court be simply guessing as to what the legislature intended?
The first question, yes, the legislature could have provided that. In response to your second question, it did not. It did not state that. It did state that if the agency were to not sustain the charges, then the agency has to award back pay. But the legislature did not specify one way or the other what shall happen and what an appellate court shall do in those situations.
Let me tell you what worries me. You argued in the reply brief that the statute is silent on what happens if the officer is convicted by the board but later exonerated. But if it's silent, how can we hold that it creates an entitlement to back pay in that circumstance sufficient to create a property interest under the Due Process Clause? I'm really having some trouble here.
Well, and the problem The answer to your question, direct answer to your question, is that there are multiple, several cases under these similar statutory schemes which stand for the proposition that if you're wrongfully denied work, that you are entitled to back pay for the period that you were wrongfully denied. And what I argued in the reply brief is that the statutory provision is merely a restatement of that common law rule.
But counsel, you, when you put it that way, it leads to the same question that both of my colleagues are having, which is, what does this have to do with the due process clause of the Constitution? It looks like you're making a claim for money under state law, and it might be a perfectly good claim, but there's no guarantee in the Constitution that states will always implement their law correctly.
Oh, okay.
In fact, the Supreme Court, I would say on the average of once a year, the Supreme Court says a violation by the state of state law does not violate the federal Constitution.
Well, this is a claim under Section 1983. It's a claim for entitlement. I think it's very similar to the claim that was involved in SWCC, which is a Seventh Circuit case. The officer was clearly entitled to reimbursement for pay. There was no process provided to him. It's not necessary.
There was. All you had to do was ask the State Court of Appeals. Mm-hmm. You didn't use the processes that were available. That's clear. You've just said that in court. But not using available processes is different from not having any processes.
Right.
Let me put this a different way. You haven't come here and said what we want is more hearings.
Right.
You've come here and said what we want is an order to pay money. But what the Due Process Clause might arguably entitle somebody to is an order to have more hearings. And that's not what you're asking for.
Well, the reason this case was dismissed is because the trial court said there was no entitlement to money. And that is the issue before the court. And clearly there is an entitlement.
That's your only argument. You're asking for money, not hearings. The Due Process Clause is about hearings, not money.
There was no process provided. No process in this situation would seem to suggest that the absence of any process at all, where there is a clear entitlement, suggests that there was a denial of due process, and that is our argument.
How do you respond to the defendant's argument that even if the statute created an entitlement, Simmons was removed from work on the chief's order and not because of the charges, and therefore no wages were withheld due to those charges? Do you remember that argument?
I do. And the response to that is, well, that order was illegal. They're arguing that because of an illegal order issued by the chief of police, then everything is okay. And that's sort of an illegitimate argument. The chief was limited by statute as to what he could and couldn't do. And their argument is that, well, notwithstanding the statutory restrictions on his authority, he did it anyway.
Well, did you ever ask the board to rule on whether it was proper for Gillespie to unofficially suspend the plaintiff in March of 2006?
Yes, in the second proceeding. I believe we did. I didn't handle the first proceeding in front of the board. I picked that up on administrative review. The second proceeding, if memory serves correctly, I believe we did. Actually, we asked the board to terminate the officer because of that situation, and they instead acquitted him. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Boyles. Mr. Murphy.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Murphy. I represent all the defendants and appellees in this appeal. Defendant's position is that there's only one narrow issue for this court to decide, and the reason is that the plaintiff has waived the other issues that could have potentially been decided here. The plaintiff filed Section 1983 and 1985 claims on October 13, 2011, but alleged conduct dating back to 2006 when he was removed from duty under order of Chief Gillespie. The district court on defendant's motion.
We need to begin with subject matter jurisdiction, and Judge Robner asked a question about subject matter jurisdiction, so that's the right place to start.
Okay, Your Honor. The court has subject matter jurisdiction because the plaintiff has alleged a claim under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983.
The Rooker-Feldman Doctrine is a limitation on federal subject matter jurisdiction. That's what you need to discuss.
I apologize, Your Honor, that I'm not prepared to discuss that during this argument. The claim was based on the federal statute, so it arose under the statute of the United States and gave the district court jurisdiction.
Did you, by the way, make a defense of claim preclusion in the district court?
We did not, Your Honor.
Any particular reason? I mean, I'm just being nosy. It doesn't actually matter because you're entitled to give up a defense of claim preclusion. But it's a pretty standard doctrine that you're supposed to make all of your remedial demands in one case. You don't demand relief, set of relief A, and then you file a separate suit to demand kind of relief B. Pretty fundamental doctrine. That's,
yes, Your Honor,
res judicata in the old language.
Yes, Your Honor, and we certainly did consider that. The strategy was that we did not want to, be required to attach a bunch of documents from the prior proceedings before the board, and there are other proceedings outside the record that may have applied for a res judicata claim. And our position was that we could just file a 12B6 motion on the face of the complaint and obtain dismissal because the complaint on its face did not state a claim.
Could the Illinois appellate court have remanded the matter to the board with the instruction for the board to enter a finding that the charges are not sustained and to order the appropriate relief?
The appellate court could have entered such an order. The appellate court certainly could have remanded the case back to the board. We're not told on the face of the complaint the details of the appellate court's decision. We have heard today that the plaintiff did not ask the appellate court to make any ruling on the issue of back pay. The case is discussed by the plaintiff in the issue of the power of the appellate court to grant certain relief. Basically say that if there is nothing in the record about back pay, then the appellate court can't rule on the issue of back pay. We don't have any allegation on this complaint that the issue of back pay was ever raised at any time, either by the board, at the board proceedings, or in the circuit court or at the appellate court.
If we read the statute as providing for back wages only if the board, you know, determines that charges aren't sustained, doesn't that create an incentive for the board of, you know, a financially struggling area like all of the, like every area in the state of Illinois, to deny even meritorious challenges? Because when such denials are later reversed, no back wages are owed.
Well, if the issue of the back wages is properly raised before the board, though, then there is the potential of the reimbursement of back wages. However, in this case, there's no allegation that the issue of back wages was ever even addressed. The plaintiff certainly had the ability to do that. And if you look at the statute, it says that the board itself, upon receiving the charges by the chief, could say, we're going to suspend the officer pending this hearing. And then the next sentence says, if the board finds that the charges are not sustained, then the officer gets reimbursement of his wages. So if the board on its own takes the action to suspend the officer based on the charges by the chief and then finds that those charges that it took the action on were not sustainable, then it's supposed to reimburse the wages for its act of suspending the officer. This threshold issue is whether there is an entitlement here under to make the due process claim for the plaintiff, and this statute simply does not provide it. The complaint specifically alleges the exact opposite of what the plaintiff needed to allege to fit within the factual circumstances that would provide an entitlement in this statute. He alleged that the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners did sustain the charges and that the appellate court later reversed that determination. The familiar rules of statutory construction apply the intent of the legislature to find that. You look at the words of the statute. The words could not be clearer here. Can't create exceptions, add provisions, delete provisions. The statutory language here is conclusive. as to the situation that must be present for an officer to be entitled to reimbursement, and that is that the board has to determine that the charges are not sustained. Again, plaintiff has alleged the exact opposite of that. The plaintiff's interpretation of the statute that he suggested to the district court and has suggested to this court is directly contrary to the language of the statute. He claimed that the statute should be liberally construed so that he does have an entitlement is, again, not able to overcome the clear and unambiguous language used by the Illinois General Assembly. The plaintiff has not provided, could not provide the district court upon its request, and has not provided this court with a single case interpreting that statute in the manner in which he claims it should be interpreted. Now, granted, there aren't any cases that I found that are directly addressing this issue, but there are cases that say if a dismissal is affirmed by the board, there can be no claim to reimbursement of wages. There wasn't a dismissal here, but the charges issued by Chief Gillespie were affirmed by the board, so there can be no claim for reimbursement. There simply is no allegation in this complaint that places Officer Simmons into the circumstances that would provide him an entitlement to reimbursement under this statute. There's no entitlement, there's no due process claim, and the district court properly dismissed the plaintiff's claim. We discussed a little bit the issue of what the appellate court could do. All the district court was saying, I think, was that this reading seems a little bit unfair. What could the appellate court do under certain circumstances? And it was saying, in an appropriate case, the appellate court is able to take some action with respect to this issue of back pay. But again, this is not an appropriate case. There's no allegation that the issue of back pay was even raised. Plaintiff has also suggested that because the order was vacated by the appellate court, that somehow provides him with an entitlement. The fact that the appellate court vacated the board's order still does not translate into a finding by the board that the charges were not sustained by the chief. And again, similarly, the plaintiff argues that the vacating of the order places the parties back in the position that they were in prior to the order being entered. Again, that leaves us with no order by the board, and again, no finding by the board that the charges were not sustained. I did want to mention that plaintiff mentioned in his reply brief characterized one of our arguments as a de minimis argument and also alleged that that was a new argument. First of all, we didn't make any kind of de minimis argument. We didn't use that phrase and did not make that argument because, to me, a de minimis argument suggests that there was a violation, but it wasn't a great violation, or that there was a violation, but there weren't great damages. We have alleged neither of those things. We don't think there was a violation. We don't think that there are damages attributable to this action by the board. And it also is not a new argument. That argument with respect to the claim that if you look at the facts alleged in the complaint, that the charges at issue did not result in any lost wages to the plaintiff, was raised in our supplemental brief at the request of the district court. That's at the record on page 94. For all these reasons, the defendants respectfully request this court to affirm the rulings of the district court on all issues.
Is there any Mr. questions? Murphy?
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Boyles?
Yes, Your Honor.
First of all, with respect to the Swick case, the case did not find that there was a, I think I said earlier that there was a denial of due process found by this court. That was not the holding of this that case. The case was somewhat similar. It was a police officer that was denied work based upon some allegations that he was mentally unfit, but there was no economic deprivation. And that is the reason why this court said there was no due process denial. It wasn't the fact that the court required the officer to go and seek process or to keep asking for process. The court said that it would not have hesitated to find that there was a denial if there had been some sort of economic impact, and there wasn't in that case. And with respect to whether or not there are any cases under this particular statutory subsection, the trial court below actually referenced two of them. One of those was overruled, as I indicated in my reply brief, but there is case law under this particular statutory subsection. We believe that there was a set of facts under which the plaintiff was entitled to relief. We believe this matter should not have been dismissed, and we are asking that it be reinstated in the trial court below.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.